from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning. Happy Thursday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. It was so fun to meet your guardian angel. What a lovely lady, and what an honest human being.
Yes,
we need
she
to
was.
Highlight those positive stories.
Yes, and the one thing that you and one of the listeners could now believe is that I really don't own a pair of cargo shorts.
Exactly.
Because I had cargo shorts, I would have had pockets, and that was the problem yesterday.
Yes,
I didn't
you would have had any... someplace to put your wallet and your phone.
Yeah, I didn't have any pockets. I was believe it or not, I was wearing short shorts with Crocs yesterday. No comment.
I'm surprised there. You got into Costco.
Me too. All right, let's get to it. This is something we've been doing new here at 10 o'clock. Three things that you need to know.
And we're going to start with the first one, which is that we are now in a fourth coronavirus wave here in Washington. Despite all the vaccines getting out to more and more people, the virus is still moving faster.
We are close to turning the corner in the state of Washington, but we are seeing the beginning of a fourth wave.
That is State Health Secretary Dr. Umair Shah, who says we all still need to take social distancing precautions, wear our masks, and avoid non-essential travel. What you may not have heard yet, though, is that a group of dogs are the first known animals in our state to show evidence of the virus that causes COVID-19. They were sampled as part of a COVID-19 study with pets that the University of Washington started early last year. And Dr. Peter Rabinowitz is the director of the UW Center for One Health Research, and he joins us live now. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. So you are the principal investigator for this study. How many dogs tested positive, and what does this tell us about COVID and transmission between people and humans? I mean, people and animals.
So we've been doing the study since last year, and we've sampled at this point close to 50 households where there's a COVID positive person in the household, and they have pets. And we were thinking right from the beginning that in places like Washington State, Seattle, people love their animals, and there would be a lot of contact between people and pets. And we also know that the SARS coronavirus 2, the virus that causes COVID-19, is originally an animal virus. We think it jumped from animals to people, and so it has certainly been reported elsewhere that it could infect other animals like dogs and cats. So we've been sampling these households, and we had done blood tests for antibody to infection in the dogs. And it took a while. We had to. We worked with the Washington State University Animal Diagnostic Laboratory to develop a new test for antibodies in the dogs. And we've just gotten confirmation of those tests. And it turns out that out of those 50 or so households we've been in with dogs, we've had 23 positive dogs so far. So it's showing that there's a lot of transmission happening between people infecting their dogs in the household. And when we asked people what they were doing with their dogs, a lot of them are sleeping in the bed with the dog, they're kissing their dog. And we are certainly recommending that at the moment people who are infected or think they're infected should social distance from their dogs as well, and probably hold off kissing and sleeping in bed until people aren't infectious anymore. And so far, by the way, we have also sampled the dog for the PCR test to see if they are shedding virus, and we have not seen that yet. So we have no evidence that the dogs are causing a risk to their owners, but we're certainly seeing that the owners are able to infect their pets.
How about the dogs, doctor? Do the dogs get very sick in these cases?
Well, I'm a human doctor, not a veterinarian, but when we ask, but we are doing this study with veterinarians and doctors working together, and when we ask the owners about their dogs, a good proportion of them do say that the dog was sick, that the dog was was not as active, had sort of runny nose, or the different ways that dogs can show COVID. So we think that a lot of the dogs are getting sick, and we would definitely, and we're hoping that more people continue to enroll in the study, and we can look even earlier at when the dogs are just starting to get sick and see if by any chance they are shedding virus, or and just more learn more about their illness and what it means for the whole household.
Dr. Rabinowitz, just real quick, you were one of the first people that we talked to on the show when the pandemic first started. And at the time, I remember G asking you, how worried are you? And you were up there in the eights and the nines. Where are you today?
Well, I think we are at this corner turning point, as you have heard, that we've got the vaccines. But if you look globally, we're still in a time of real concern. So I think that as a global problem, we have a long way to go. There are many countries that have not been able to really roll out the vaccine anywhere near what the United States and some other countries are doing. And as long as there are people around the world who are not vaccinated, who are susceptible, who could still get it, this vaccine is going to continue to spread every time we let our guard down. And that's a tall order. We've got to get the world immune, because the virus popping up anywhere in the world is a problem for the whole world. So we can't just say, oh, we've taken care of the United States, we're good, because we've seen in other places and in the United States that as long as infection is going on, you have a chance of more mutations. And those mutations have potential to not be as well covered by the vaccine and be potentially more transmissible or more virulent. So we're not done until we're done. And it's unfortunately not just something we take care of in our own backyard. We have to think about the whole world, because the virus is showing us how connected we are. And animals are part of that world, and that's the one health idea, that we have to look at the health of the animals as well as people. We've seen that in mink farms, where the virus has jumped from people into minks and then back to the workers again, sometimes with mutations. So we have to keep working both for humans and for animal health in this ongoing struggle.
Absolutely. Dr. Peter Rabinowitz with the UW Center for One Health Research, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure, and best of luck.
Thank you so much. And we are going to go to our story number two. And as you've heard, the Puget Sound region's biggest summer festival is going to be very different this year, thanks to the pandemic. And we're going to hear more about that from our own Heather Bosch.
For a second year in a row, Seafair will largely be a virtual event.
Planning a multi-week festival takes months.
And spokesman Patrick Harrison says the reality is it's unclear when more COVID restrictions will be lifted.
You know, we have to plan for the phase that we're in, not for the phase that we hope to be this summer.
That means no large gatherings, even outside, or events that draw them. But thanks to flight simulators, the Navy's Blue Angels will tear across a virtual blue sky, and hydroplane drivers will compete online.
It's like it's a video game, but they are in their own boats. And we've created a digital virtual space of the Lake Washington race course.
Locations for 5K runs will soon be announced that you can presumably run on your own while practicing social distancing.
People can do their own 5K, and so they'll get, you know, T-shirts as they typically do. They'll get medals as they typically do. And we'll send out prizes based upon their timing.
As for parading through Seattle,
you know, torchlight parade down Fourth Avenue, you know, that's hundreds of thousands of people and we just won't be able to do that.
Instead, Seafair caravans will head into neighborhoods on different weekends. Come on, this is not going to be the same. Harrison gets that.
You know, we were really hoping that the state and the city would use Seafair, in particular the 4th of July, as kind of that emergence of celebrating community, celebrating the nation's independence, but coming out of this. And we're just not quite there yet.
But in a sign of optimism that we will be quite there yet and more, plans are already being set for next year. Harrison says an actual performance by the Blue Angels has already been booked.
And we have Heather here with us, too. And
give them props for trying. They are trying. But I'm not sure hydroplane a la Mario Kart is going to be the same.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be the same. And usually, we have a family barbecue, and that's when we watch the Blue Angels. And even though more often we're paying more attention to the food on the grill, it's at least a gathering, and then you've got this sound of
you can hear them rumbling through the air and screeching by, and not this year.
Well, you know, having Seafair virtually is the same as having After Prom virtually. just cancel the whole thing. Like, whatever. Like, just give us this, right? Like, and I can hear it in Ursula's voice this morning, Heather. Mm-hmm. Ursula's coming around. Even enough is enough with this whole virtual Seafair that's making Ursula say, yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah, but you've got all these people that are invested in this, that this is their job, this is their passion for many of them. They volunteer, and to take it all away from them, that would be pretty harsh.
I get it, and you can't because, yeah, there's still something. It is a celebration, and that, like he said, there's a lot of planning that goes ahead of time. But, you know, can you imagine expecting the Blue Angels to be here and then a week beforehand say, no, you got to cancel, or the Hydro races?
Yeah, so they had to be preemptive on this and say, look, we don't know if we can allow large gatherings. Right now we're looking at a fourth wave, so that's probably unlikely. They had to make plans, but it's just not the same.
Gee, if we can do a socially distanced party, you can come over to my house to watch the Blue Angels.
You got to wear the Crocs, though.
Heather, you too.
Okay. You're on.
Appreciate it. Right. Thanks,
Thank
Heather.
Thank you, Heather.
Okay. The third thing that you need to know, and this is a discussion that a lot of people are having, and I didn't realize it, but apparently it's something that you talked about with some of your friends, and it's this idea of vaccine supremacy. And people are jockeying for which vaccine they want to get as if they have much choice. Because generally you don't, but people are bragging, apparently, if they get the Pfizer shot over Moderna or Johnson & Johnson.
Yes, Ursula, it's a thing. Okay, now, one thing about our listeners, they love to tell, they're truth tellers, and they let us know. Has it happened to you? Have you been having a conversation with someone, or someone was having a conversation with you and you were talking about the vaccine and it's, oh yeah, I got the Pfizer. There's a little bit more of the inflection of the voice when someone has Pfizer as opposed to, yeah, I got the Johnson & Johnson about a month ago. There's a difference. One of our bosses, I talked to him yesterday. By the way, he called and it was actually a good conversation with one of the bosses. But anyways, he had mentioned that he had gotten his vaccine, and he was quick to say, oh, I got the Pfizer, by the way, too. That's
so
the best one.
So he's a Pfizer snob, too?
He's a Pfizer snob. Now, I'm telling you, it exists. Now, somebody's thinking that we're probably making a big deal out of this.
We're not.
Guarantee you the text line is going to text in and say, oh, my goodness, people are being snobs with the type of vaccines that they get.
I got Moderna, and I feel perfectly fine with it. And by the way, so the health experts are saying this is exactly what we don't want to happen, because all of them are great vaccines. Even J&J, the efficacy rate of Johnson & Johnson is 66%. Uh-huh. So that's compared to 94% for Moderna and I think 95%. That's just negligible between Moderna and Pfizer. Both of them are very similar. They both have a double dose thing. The thing that's great about J&J, of course, is the one shot versus two. And then now it's got its troubles. But again, I think that Johnson & Johnson is going to become available. And for some, that is the best one. But this, so Moderna is supposed to be what? A strong middle class? So someone was quoted in this story that says, okay, one of my cousins got Moderna, and this is a quote, like, okay, that's okay. We need a strong middle class. We can't all be CEOs and get Pfizer. Apparently there's a word called Pfizer files.
I'm telling you.
Who's creating this? I'm going to tell you who's creating this.
Who?
Pfizer.
No. Wait a minute. You're blaming Pfizer for this?
Yes, because this is what I'm saying. Do you know that in Germany, that there were people who refused, because Pfizer is also a German company.
Okay.
And Pfizer, and I can't remember the other company that's with Pfizer's vaccine. But in any case, my sister who lives there was saying that people were preferring that particular vaccine because, hey, it was made here. We want it, you know, since it's so new, we can trust it more, et cetera, et cetera. I think all that's happening, but I think there's some kind of marketing going on. And recently, the Pfizer CEO said we may be into having to need a booster shot, too. Right?
Right.
I'm not into conspiracy theories at all. And again, I got two vaccines, but I'm starting to wonder, like, who's pushing this baloney?
Okay, the Gene Ursula Show listeners, I told you about them. I'm telling you, they always tell the truth. Here you go. 206 says, Pfizer for the win.
Oh,
totally
no.
Bragged about this last night. Let's see, 253, I get better cell reception after Pfizer.
Okay.
Now I will say this, Ursula. When I went to go, and this is the truth, when I went to go and get my vaccine, the lady in line, and I'd asked her, I said, hey, so, you know, what do you think about the Pfizer vaccine? She says, oh, it's the best one.
See, now, that's not good. Whoever said that's not a good thing to say, because then that's going to make – we're talking about vaccine hesitancy in all seriousness now. It's not about snobbery, but I think we're just a very competitive bunch. It's just human nature to want to be, well, I've got the better one. You know what? I got Moderna. I feel perfectly fine. I feel great.
Okay, well,
it's all good.
Let's drop all the religions then.
What does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Vaccine and religion? What the heck?
It doesn't.
You're a nut.
Hey, coming up next, did you guys know 1 in 4 workers are considering quitting their job after the pandemic? We'll tell you guys why next. It's the Gene Ursula Show.
Welcome back to the Gene Ursula Show, Thursday morning edition. The sun's not shining just yet, but we sure had a beautiful run, and I hope that you got a chance to enjoy the sunshine while it was here. So there is a story that caught our eye, and the headline is that 1 in 4 workers is considering quitting their job after the pandemic. And of course, a lot has changed at the workplace since last March. For starters, so many of us who still have jobs are working from home, but it turns out that there are people who have been eyeing other jobs and maybe have more choices. And there are also, gee, more jobs available than you might imagine. And people are without work right now, but are kind of snubbing their noses and looking at it and saying, you know what, I don't have to work that job.
Right. I think that in yesteryear, and how maybe you and I and our parents looked at jobs, we looked at them kind of like we do relationships and or marriages. You're with your job. You stay loyal to that job. You spend 30 plus years with that job. And then at the very end, you get a wristwatch and a retirement party at the end with a few of your colleagues with some punch, and you're on your way.
Sometimes you don't get that anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and then what would happen is we stay loyal to these jobs. And today, what folks are doing is they're quitting their jobs because, and according to the labor experts, they're basically saying they're doing that in order to receive these pay raises and promotions that they weren't getting at their current jobs. Remember when we first started our show last year? And we talked about pay raises, and we asked our listeners to text in, and people were texting in not getting raises.
Oh, and they said they wouldn't even dare ask for a raise during
right.
the pandemic, because there is this fear. Initially, there was this fear that you ask for a raise right now when people are losing their jobs left and right. I think it was a rational fear. It was like, I should just be happy that I have mm-hmm. work.
You want to know, you know when the best time to ask for a raise is? Is when you've already secured a raise at another new job.
Yes.
And then you go to your bosses and say, hey, by the way, boss, it'll raise. Oh, okay, no thanks. 2 week notice is in. And by the way, the 2 week notice, is that still a thing? Because you don't really have to do.
Well, absolutely. I tell everybody, I tell my kids, you do not leave your employer in a bind. If you want to be able to use your past employment as a reference and your past employer as a reference, you better leave on the best terms ever and in such a manner that if there were another position open, they would want you back at some time in the future.
Why is it always on the employee? Like, I've never had an employer or heard of an employer say, hey, Bob, in 2 weeks, I'm firing you.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Right? But you want me to give 2 weeks to let you know.
One of the things
I'm
that they do, I have heard about, is they say, I think it's time for you to hang up whatever it is that you're doing. And this would be a great date for that. And then you work out a solution. Okay, but let's look at a couple of reasons why people say they're planning to leave. So, of the 26% of workers planning to leave after the pandemic, an overwhelming number, 80%, are doing so because they're concerned that their careers have been stalled. They want career advancement. 72%, though, say that the pandemic actually caused them to rethink their skill set.
Come on.
So you realize with the time that you have, things slowing down, hey, maybe this is not the direction that I want to go. And I say this as someone, we often joke that I've been here for more than 30 years. It's not that I didn't have other opportunities. There were many. But I made some choices. I love the company that we work for. I didn't want to move when my kids were young. But that's the beauty for so many people. And I will say, so many people who are younger. I think this story applies to really if you're in your 20s to 40s. Once you start hitting your 50s, let's get real, it's harder. I know people who are in their 50s right now in my age group. It's hard when you've lost your job to try to start over again.
Hey, you know what, Ursula? You're right. I had a conversation 2 days ago with someone who's in their 60s talking about how hard it is out there in the job market for them. And so, yeah, that's not a joke.
No.
That is a real thing right there.
Too many employers don't value experience. They put too much value on how cheap can I get somebody.
Or, sure.
Or they associate someone who is advanced in their age with not innovative anymore. They're not coming in with any new ideas. It's so weird how society does that. And I see that, obviously, the older I get. But hey, that is an unfair truth.
Hey, Ursula, you just said something. And the motto of employers out there trying to find someone as cheap as possible or, Why do they do that? Because I was looking at the numbers. According to this article, the median corporate CEO pay is now $21.3 million a year. It is up 23 times since 1965.
But you know why it goes up so high?
Why?
Because that CEO is able to set policies that you're just going to burn out these young people who you can get for very little amounts of money, and you answer to the shareholders with tons of profit. And in doing that, then you get a big salary. I mean, that's since the beginning of time. But what's so strange is now there are, you would think that so many people are desperate for jobs that they would accept any kind of work. And it's not. And there's this sentiment or this narrative that, oh, people are just lazy right now. And the unemployment benefits are so good. What's the incentive? And I'm sure that does apply for some.
Right.
But for many, they're saying, you know what? I don't have to work for pennies or I don't have to work for that. I do have some other choices.
My buddy is a hiring manager and was hiring for $18.50 an hour. This was just a month ago. $18.50 an hour at a grocery store and was having a hard time filling that up. I'm like, you got any part-time? Because I might think about coming to do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I it's not laziness. I think and believe, Ursula, what it is there are people that are okay and willing to say to their friends, not to say we didn't do it before, hey, you and two of my buddies, let's go ahead and go rent this house. Mm-hmm. Let's get our expenses lower. Whereas Before, we used to let me get my own place type of deal. And so our expenses would be higher. And it seems like that these young folks, it seems like they're smarter with their money as well, too. And they're using these jobs to leverage themselves into a better paying job.
Mm-hmm.
And you really
and they're not
can't
afraid
be,
to move.
No, no. You can't be mad at that, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So there is some onus on the employer now that you need to be more accommodating. Otherwise, you lose talent. I mean, just this week, I found out that someone I know is giving up a great job. And in the middle of a pandemic, got offered a job that pays more than $30,000 a year more than this person is currently making. Well, why wouldn't you leave?
Right.
Like,
right.
You do have that ability. But it's surprising because you would think that there are just jobs that anyone would grab right now because so many people are desperate. But it's not necessarily the case. And I think that there are a lot of people who have businesses who are having a hard time filling them.
Ursula, before we wrap, and usually when I have questions about bosses and companies, I'm sorry that they get the defaulted to you because you were a boss.
For about seven or eight long years.
Yeah, and you worked hard at it too. Here's a question, and I think that it's stopping now, but it still continues. Why is it that when employers and bosses, when an employee wants to take vacation time or something like that, why ask? So if I say to you, hey, next Tuesday and Wednesday, I want to take a couple of days off. Why should an employer ask? They should never, like, it's
ask
really.
Ask what? What should an employer?
Like, ask why we're taking those vacation days.
I don't think that they normally would.
Ursula, come on.
Is that
tell
right?
the truth. Tell the truth. Yes, they do. Now, they probably do it less today, but this is a big deal. Yes, it happens.
Well, yeah, they
hey,
should,
you
yeah.
know we got a lot of stuff coming up next week. Are you sure you need to take it that time? Yes, I asked
think
for
the
it.
The question might come up. The question should only come up if there is going to be extreme difficulty in finding a replacement. And is there a better time? If it's something that you can put off, or is it something that is an emergency that you have? And a lot of times, let's face it, I know from being that manager that you get these requests and it's 3 days away. And you know what? Maybe you don't have a good alternative.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. So it can be very challenging.
Hey, coming up next in scenarios, someone writes in and says, I just love burgers. We do that next. It's Gene Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. That's right. Happy Thursday to all of you. Coming up at 11:06, we will give you new news at 11. That's right. We'll be tuning in for that. But right now it's time for scenarios brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Okay. I got into a situation and need help getting out of it. You're going to think this is no big deal, but it kind of is. And it's more complicated than it seems. I met a girl about 3 months ago. We started going out, and she told me she was vegetarian. I was trying to impress her by showing we had a lot in common, so I pretended to be vegetarian too. It wasn't hard at first. I mean, there's plenty of good food that doesn't include meat, and I had no idea we'd be going out for as long as we have been. But here we are, and we're getting along just great. We're spending a lot of time together and everything. When I'm alone, it's easy to order anything and everything that I want and just have it delivered. And I do. And it's almost always meat, but I hide all the evidence. But as we get more serious, I started worrying that she'd find out I am a secret carnivore. Should I fess up or pretend to just start to like meat out of the blue? 98973, the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you up the bat first.
I knew it was going to go this direction. Of course you should be honest. And hopefully she will understand that you were concerned that you wouldn't continue to be able to date her if she was really adamant about you being a vegetarian too. But I would just be more concerned about the idea that you lied and you felt like you couldn't be yourself and be accepted.
Right.
And I would worry that this would just be me. So the sooner he can fess up, the better. because if he let it drag on, then I would be asking myself, what else have you not been telling the truth about in this relationship? I think it's simple. Telling the truth is always the best answer.
Laura?
Oh, I totally agree with Ursula. I think sometimes when you start a relationship, you feel like you have to match the person that you're dating. And you should really just relax and be yourself as much as possible, right? Because otherwise you're going to end up with someone who doesn't actually want to be with the person you really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well,
can I add one more thing? And the only reason I say this is because when my oldest son was living in California, he said that he had a couple of girlfriends. I will say he had a girlfriend every year. That sounds bad, but every year of college, he seemed to have a different girlfriend, and each one of them was vegan. It was very popular to be vegan or vegetarian, and my son eats meat. And when he finally, and I envy people who can be so disciplined to not eat meat and eat vegetarian and eat healthy. So this is no diss on anyone who chooses that. But he was so relieved when he finally met someone who ate meat. Okay. That just went so wrong. Jump in there, Chief. Jump in.
Okay, so back to scenarios. Leave me alone. Let me go. So in this case, Ursula, Laura, just say, you know, I've been thinking about eating meat again. And just start eating meat again.
No,
right then. No, you already. Lie. Look,
no.
You already messed up. There's
I did
no
mess up. I messed
no,
up.
No, 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 not you. No. I'm talking about him. He already messed up. You know, sometimes, you know, you try to... Here's one of the worst mistakes that you can make for a first date or in the very beginning. I never understand why everybody goes to these really nice restaurants for a first date or in the beginning of the relationship. Guess what? You're basically setting an unreal standard, right? Like, you know, Lillian, we went to a coffee shop, baby. At a coffee shop. And then you build from there. You build. You don't want to do that. So in this case, a man wanted to make it look like he was a vegetarian. Okay, it was a mistake. You had no idea that you was going to be with this person. Just come right out and say, You know what? I want to start eating meat again.
But just, yeah, okay. But tell the truth. I mean, it. I don't think he has to just pretend like suddenly I like meat. If that was what you were saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm still stuck on what I just said a minute ago. That is going to be on my future blooper reel, for sure.
I am getting...
I'm so thankful that Chef is not here.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm so thankful that that's not going to come back to haunt me at the end of the show.
Hold on. Hey, you guys listening at home, keep your receipts on this date so when Chef gets back that he knows at 10:50, that segment scenarios on 4:22.
I am sweating. That just came out all wrong in any case.
All right. So
tell
coming
the
up,
truth.
Coming up next, actually we are going to still do agree to disagree. And here's a question. Did the pandemic kill shopping malls? Yes, we'll be arguing and debating that topic next. You guys are listening to The Gene Ursula Show.